This is session number 10 for Eduardo. It is April 13, 2009, and it's 3:23 Hawaiian time. Eduardo, say hello to Ion.
Hello, Ion.
Good evening, good evening. You have
greetings. I would like to connect to three scholars who are no longer with us in the physical sense, and I would like to ask these scholars a couple of questions for all three at the same time.
Okay, let me give a little groundwork to make sure that we're easy, that we have a complete understanding. Do you want the information from these scholar physicians that you know of that are past or non-physical, and you'd like to communicate them basically all their answers at the same
fine
time? Okay. Okay, very good.
Good. Yeah.
Go ahead, Ed.
Can I ask the question to, can
sure.
I tell you the three scholars and ask the question?
Of course,
yes.
Of course.
Okay. The three scholars that I want to connect with are Johan Huizinga, Marshall McLuhan, and Jean Baudrillard.
Okay, that's an interesting combination. All right. The answers aren't going to be the same. You understand that?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I would like to spell Huizinga, unless you already know. It's H-U-I-Z-I-N-G-A.
We know.
Okay. And Jean Baudrillard, B-A-U-D-R-I-L-L-A-R-D.
We get this from you, so it's good. Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay. What I'm interested in with to know from these three scholars is has to do with language, the apparatus of speech, and thought. Specifically, I'm interested to know what is happening or what will happen to the framing process of tactility under the condition of the blending of the physical and the non-physical, and how this framing process of tactility will affect our consciousness.
Spectacular. Okay. First off, that we may break this down a little bit, and you may get to redefine those different aspects that you're asking just to make sure we get it covered for your understanding. Let's start with thought. Okay? Thought. Now, you may run a little, well, this is probably the closest to a McLuhanism, if there is such a thing. In the thought, or the process of thought, drives the mass consciousness. And then the mass consciousness then drives the thought. That creates what you describe or know as a meme. Those memes then are activated in society as a whole, either at a subdural level or at a more open level. And that tactility expression or the tactile representation of that is in the exponential expletives that come through your new, we went from printing press into radio, newspaper, TV, internet, and it just keeps growing exponentially. And that has a causal effect or a tactile representation of that thought being sunk, okay? But all those different mediums of expression or communication or media, maybe the best word, is all derived from the issue of thought, okay? So the thought that proceeds, they comes most times in a level or degree of contrast. For example, when they invented the printing press, when they were, and actually the problem was the selling of indulgence. And so therefore the printing press allowed them to more quickly and more cost-effectively print indulgences, which made money for the Catholic Church. So there was a problem. The problem was they couldn't make money fast enough. The solution was the invention of the printing press. processing of those communications was increased because of the ability to have it mass-produced. And then that led and spawned into your information superhighway that you describe now. Let's see. Now we'll go to another one, another aspect of thought. Another aspect of thought is the heart of creation is divisible by the concept or the thought that becomes part of the spirit man, which is very different than the McLuhan side. It becomes more of the soul's inspiration would be a perfect word. Then you have another aspect that was not as complete. The third aspect would be more from the thought being a pattern or a schedule. It would be a scheduler of creation. That would be from your third aspect. Now, we also have an aspect different from all three, if you're interested.
I would like to refine my question.
Very good.
My concern with the entire apparatus of language, speech, the entire architecture that involves the mouth, the fact that speech comes from thought, and with the thinning of the veil, will we be able to have, to do away, to obsolete this, what I seem to find very... there's an insufficiency in using language and using words. So my question is, if we are going to go into thought to thought, direct thought to thought, without having to use the apparatus of speech and language and semantics, will we still have tactility from thought to thought? Is there a resonant interval that exists if we retrieve the Lemurian or Atlantean concept of ESP?
Hey, it didn't come from them, but yes, that is precisely necessarily the case. But you have to have an effect, you see. This ESP is not new. This ESP is not, many people have been doing it forever. You've been doing it forever yourself personally. Have you ever been thinking about somebody that you hadn't heard from in a long time? Then all of a sudden you come along and they'll send you a card or call you on the phone or send you an email.
Absolutely.
Out of the blue. Well, that's ESP.
And is there tactility from thought to thought? Is there an interval or is it completely blended?
It's completely blended, but now the tactility.
So there is no tactility.
Well, now wait a second. Now let's be clear. The tactility comes from the human aspect of the resonance. So, if you have a thought and you want to talk to somebody, and then you
with
think
thought.
About them, with thought.
No speech involved.
And they instantly ring the telephone, or if you walk over to the phone, and it just so happens to start ringing, and you know who it is before you answer, then there is no tactility in that expression. You knew who is calling. Now, if there is tactility, okay, but you control... Then you could be surprised that a week later that your long-lost buddy sends you a card just saying hi, thinking about you, you see. There is a degree of tactility depending on how close you are to the vibrational vortex of that wanting or that reality of a clear flow of ESP. Same thing is true with emails. Sometimes you send emails and they go instantly. Sometimes you send an email and you might call somebody and say, did you get my email? And they go, well, just a second ago. Well, I sent it 30 minutes ago. Well, why is it that there's a break or a tactile break in time for that 30 minutes? You say, same causal effect. Different music, different instruments. You can play music differently. And some people hear the tones and it seems raspy or running together. Other people can hear the individual tones between the notes being struck. Same thing. That's a degree or an aspect of the tactility of your perception of the resonance of the vibration of your hearing. And that hearing is done in the mind. So, the absolute answer to your question is it's just becoming. It's just becoming. It's just becoming. It's just emotions and thoughts from one human being to another human being that also can resonate with the non-physical part of themselves. And that's the part of the thinning of the veil. Now, let me be clear so we're not getting on the wrong track, on a false premise here. The veil has not thinned from our non-physical aspect. The veil is as thin as it ever was, okay? Here's where the thinning comes from. From your physicalness, because you're the creator, you wanted the grid realigned. You wanted the magnetic poles to be adjusted a little bit. You wanted the world to create, to heal or change or adjust itself, see? And your wantings, that's what thinned the veil. It wasn't from our side, because on our side, we don't create. You have all the ability to create, totally. From non-physical, that's the point of staying alive or in physicalness or not transcending to from the physical to the non-physical. It's because of your knowing that you have the desire to mix it up and through your contrast create. That's not very much fun. But that you could actually absolutely have a causal effect and move heaven and earth in your universe, that's what gets your juices flowing or makes, as the catechists could say, the sap rise. You see? So it's your expression or your creation that has caused the perceived perception or tactility, if you want to use that good word, in the thinning of the veil. And that's what's causing this interaction to be more simple, easy, and fluid. Just that easy.
Can I ask Mr. McLuhan then, is tactility eternal? Has tactility always been?
As people know, there will always be a tactile representation of the current meme that's being expressed in your now.
Fine. Thank you. I'd like to move on to my next topic. What comes before thought, or what has come before thought? What precedes thought?
Typically, in your world or your knowing, we would say nothing, but that's not exactly the case, because sometimes the thought is caused by a contrast in your physicalness, okay? You don't think about going to the bathroom before you have the urge or the biological function to empty your bladder, correct?
Correct.
You don't just go walk by a bath, but you can walk by a bathroom and go, well, I'm here, I might as well go. But now that thought puts you in the action of going to having the physical expression of emptying your bladder. Because it's handy and you're there. But typically, you don't go sit in the bathroom and wait until your bladder fills. You see? So therefore, the pressure of your bladder getting full causes your mind, the receptors in your mind, to activate in you the thought that it would be very convenient for me very quickly to stop to go to the bathroom. So a wanting, a contrast can cause you to engage in an emotion-driven thought, which then sets you in your vibrational proximity of that reality, then that can become your physical manifestation. So the answer is nothing comes before thought, except that there are occasions and the contrast or resistance sometimes promotes the idea that you want something a different way. Because the only reason that you do anything in your physicalness is for the thought that it will make you feel better. Why do you eat? Make you feel better. Why do you go to sleep? You're tired. Rest will help you. Why do you exercise if you exercise? Because of the thoughts that it will have resistance in your body to make you a more efficient working machine.
continuing with the topic of thought.
Yeah.
Does thought begin in humans at the instance of conception, or is thought capable of being carried over from past life traumas according to total biology?
Well, past life traumas, meaning you are in your physicalness, you have a trauma, and then it comes into your new physicalness?
Yes.
Groped.
Well, does that happen?
That's an issue, because the answer to that is absolutely no. But then you'd have karma, and if you didn't do it right the first time, then you'd come back to fix it or change it or make it better or get it right this time. And if that be the case with the way you operate your causal universe or your creationism, most people would then be delegated to come back, or the tactility of that expression, to use a McLuhanism, would make you come back as a cockroach with a disease, you see. Because there is no way for you to get it wrong, and there is no way for you to get it done. So any trauma that comes forth from non-physical, there may be resistance regarding yourself in your new presentness, but it doesn't come from one instance of you recounting your past life, because it just doesn't work that way. What happens is you're alive and you're physical and you have a spirit or a non-physical part attached to your body. That's how the doctors can verify that you indeed are alive. Do you agree?
Yes.
Okay.
So can we say that in human, the first thought occurs at the moment between egg and sperm? Is there a first thought at that very instant of conception?
Okay. Once the sperm pierces the embryo, the egg, and there is a solidification that stops any other sperm from piercing that creation, when that happens, then the cell divides the very first time.
Yes.
When the cell divides the very first time, that's when thought begins. That's the
first evidence of thought in the human condition.
That is perfect words. Perfect words. Perfect
and
words.
And what is that first thought in all humans? Is there a first thought, or is it proprietary to the individual soul?
No. No. Because at that point, it's still coming in the presence of non. Dipping, if you had a gulf of souls and you had a dipper, you dip a soul out of the gulf, and at that point of dividing, that's when that soul is in that human beingness of that zygote, I guess at that point is what your terminology would be. But the first thought, when that soul is implanted, entrusted in another human being, isn't that amazing? In a womb, that first thought is, okay, divide, okay, divide, okay, divide, okay, divide. And then as those cells divide, that's its only thought. The thought is to divide, because without dividing, it doesn't matter if you think all the best thoughts that have ever been in the history of the universe. It doesn't matter until you get divide. And then after a little while, divide turns into, okay, form lungs, form capillaries, form. Because you got to remember, in the placenta, it's being fed by the mother. The blood flow, the energy flow that's causing or allowing that to divide is the very essence of that interaction.
Okay, I understand divide as doubleness, but can we say that the first thought is a form of doubleness?
Yeah, okay. Those are great words.
That's great.
I mean, don't make it a, don't make it, don't make 24 hours. But you need a span of time between inception and the birth, you say. In fine, humans set that up.
Fine. I'd like to move on to my next question.
Very wonderful.
I'm struggling with language, so I'm going to do my best.
Did
I
you
want
have
to understand
another one you preferred?
I'm sorry?
Did you have another language that you preferred?
You mean other than English?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just each I find I'm struggling with the right, trying to get the right words. So here goes my next question.
Okay.
I understand that you have to allow that knowing to come into your physicalness. Now, what causes unallowing of essence to manifest? What interferes with the allowing or the knowing or creating of source energy to come through? What blocks that? What blocks the allowing in humans?
Yeah, resistance, okay? That's perfect words. It's resistance. Now, let's develop that just a little bit. You're born, okay? And you are resistance-less. You understand that babies are kind of born. They don't have to have OBGYNs to actually complete the task.
Yes, I understand.
A long time, they're just born. Well, when they're born, okay, they have no resistance. But that's why babies are just so delicious. And if you can catch them at the very beginning, you see, you resonate, they resonate perfectly from source energy because they just came from source energy. They know nothing else. And the first thing that happens after the cord is divided, chewed, cut, sawed, whatever happens in that process, when the birthing takes place, ever how that takes place, the first contract is they give them a stimulus. Used to smack them on the butt, now they kind of rub a little here and there, and cause them to cry or to activate the breathing mechanism that is their lungs. And that's contrast. And then it's cold. Then it's hot. And then I'm hungry. And then, you know, the whole thing starts happening from that we cause. And then we go into the place where they actually live. They choose to stay forth in physical to create. Now, they might be surprised that they wanted to be born in Malibu, and they're in Minnesota, and so they're not so happy about that, but it's okay, because at that stage, they really don't care. They just want to come forth and create. And if they're in a ghetto, they'll work it out and become a great basketball player, if that be necessary. You can overcome all that process. But what you're asking is what causes that separation from the non-physical part of you, source energy. It's what your scriptures talk about when it's the absence or being absent from God. You see, that's a disconnection, you see. And that disconnection is when you start being driven by the McLuhanisms that let you know that the world is coming to an end and you're going to lose your house and the economy has fallen and nobody's going to have a job because everything is bad. That catches on and you catch and you hear that. And then you realize that you'd hoped for so much more, but it was pretty much over. Then you have a disconnect. And then you start using language, words, that then settle into your belief system. Oh, now, what's a belief? A belief is just a thought you've been thinking for a very long time. That's all it is. So if you change things, thoughts that you've been thinking for a very long time, you then have causally changed your belief system. Or your belief. All right. Now, once you have that disconnect, and that disconnect comes into your reality, that Lou Dobbs on CNN was indeed right, that unemployment's going to be 9.5%, and pick a topic. It really doesn't make much difference. And you start resonating in that post-information, disinformation, and you come and you resonate with that, you cause a disconnect within yourself. And then Lou Dobbs then can have an potential effect or a causal effect on your thought, your emotion, which can then move you into the vibrational proximity of losing your house and losing your job and not having enough gas or not having all the gas in the world and can't pay for it, and global warming and the tsunami is going to come wash you away, and on and on and on and on and on. Those are what cause disconnection from the non-physical part of you that is always pure positive love.
Fine. How do we best change thought and language to stop the interference and creating of this disconnect between physical and the non-physical? How do we stop? How do we best change thought and language so that we can have more thinning of the veil and more direct blending with the non-physical?
How fabulous. How fabulous. That is perfect words. You've taken us to places we've never been before, and the heavens are rejoicing because now your resistance regarding your reality is causing you to have a thought which turns into a question that sets the new pecking order for your reality. Here's how you do it. You can't change the whole wide world. The world does not need saving. The world does not need healing. The world is not broken. You are the center of your universe and only yours. Okay? So if you just spend all your energy and time thinking the thoughts that affect your universe, then that can and will, according to McLuhan, catch on and become a meme, and the whole wide world will adjust itself based upon the manifestations that are available. Do you have a Palm Pilot?
No.
Okay.
No.
You understand that that technology is available to you.
Yes.
If it's your choosing, you see.
Yes.
So if you create what you're asking here in your universe, then at that point then becomes available to other people in other universes or neighborhoods or towns or cities or states or countries or worlds. So here's what you do. You come into a place where, in a simple way to describe it, of a simple process, because you don't want to make the words that seem to be the problem difficult. In every action that you take, ask this simple question first. What's the fastest path to my joy? Okay, let's say you hate brushing your teeth. Okay, you don't care to. And to brush your teeth would not be the fastest path to your joy. Well, then never take action if it's not the fastest path to your joy. Period. Never do it. That doesn't mean ever. It just means it's just that moment in time, because it can change. Because what happens is, after you sort of roll along the day, all of a sudden you have this grunge on your teeth and you don't feel comfortable because it's kind of like icky. And then you do that because the reason you brush your teeth is the thoughts that make you feel better. It's not to keep your teeth in your mouth, because they're going to fall out anyway, you say. So
interesting.
That process, if I'm getting you there now, that process in anything, for example, it's not the fastest path to my joy to go to work today. Then don't take that action. Because if going to work solves all the issues, then you wouldn't have the question, you see. Because the money isn't the answer to your happiness. Nor does those actions. Now, if those actions are aligned, let's say you do something that you love. Let's say that the work that you do for free. Well, then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you can get paid to do something that you do for free. And it's great. So enjoy that, you see. Then that becomes the fastest path to your joy. And you're increased exponentially to whatever it is that is you're wanting. Now, the thought process, okay, affecting the thought process in a 3-2-1 expression, and somehow you kind of understand that, where we already get, but you understand that. So that the thought, okay, and or where you are that you like or don't like, okay, because you are where you are, and most you humans take yourself most everywhere you go. Few times you go places that you don't take your physicalness, but most everywhere you go, you take yourself. So, if you come into that place, walking, if you never asked for a new pair of shoes, you'd have one pair of shoes for all your life. They'd never wear out, you wouldn't notice, and that can be your experience. But it doesn't seem very fun to you to have the same pair of shoes forever. But it can be your expression of experience if you want to. Okay.
All right. Bam. All right. That's perfect. That brings me perfectly, like a dovetail, to my next question.
Yes.
So, Ion, the way I understand it is that the motivation of joy is the best counter to the resistance.
Absolutely.
And if that is correct, if I understand that correctly, then what is it in humans? What is the cosmic origin of the advocistic impulse or the impulse away from joy? What's the cosmic origins of that in humans? And what drives this masochistic away from joy impulse in us?
Well, they don't see it. You can pick somebody if you want to. Adolf Hitler thought he was making the world a better place. You see, that wasn't
it's so simple. What you're
joy.
Saying?
Sorry,
it's so simple. What you're saying, I get it.
Yeah. Because they don't. They see that as a bad. Okay, let's do bank robbers. No, let's do heroin addicts. That's fun. Why does anybody do anything for the thought that in the doing of it will make them feel better? Why do you have alcoholic abuses? Because they have an issue that they can't deal with or don't want to deal with, and the alcohol, increased alcohol level in their bloodstream causes a euphoria, a blissful disconnect from the issue that's causing them to want that, and therefore it's the fastest path of their joy to shoot something, drink something, smoke something, pump something, whatever, and in that process, if they achieve a more blissful state, see, then that becomes the fastest path to their joy. And if they do it long enough, guess what happens?
It becomes misery.
Well, it can, but after a point, it gets to a point that's not really what they were after, so they change their wanting. And look here how it works. It's so much fun. You get hooked on, quote, certain substances, and then you decide you want to quit, and they even put you in the hospital if it gets to be a big enough thing, if that's where you're pushing it, and the doctor won't take you off of it immediately. They will wean you off of it because you're so connected to the euphoric state that substance brings you. You will not allow, you would rather go into non-physical than not enjoy that exposed, expressed condition of bliss. However misguided, but see, you can't get it wrong and you can't get it done, you see. Chewing tobacco might give you a little high, but it, first off, it'll probably make you sick as a dog, I guess is a good way to say it. But it's not wrong to try that, but then you get to choose. Well, that may be fun for some folks, but it really didn't do much for me, so thanks, but no thank you. Strong drink, same way. You know, wine is a staff of life. Well, it's wrong to drink wine. Well, no, it's not. It just may be wrong for you to drink wine, you say. And that's from a choice, not because somebody said something's right and something's wrong, because you can't get it wrong. If you can get it wrong, then you can get it done. If you can get it done, then that would stop the exponential increase of the universe. But that's not going to happen.
Fine. I'd like to move on to my next question. I'm trying to understand that in the thinned veil landscape, it is now an alternative to the guilt that civilizations and religions provided for us for social order. And that kept people within their savage limitation. How are people going to behave ethically under the new conditions of a thin veil? What will be the new ethic limitation that will stop them from behaving savagely?
What do you describe as savagely? The way bill collectors are activating and operating now, some would consider savagely.
I agree.
But the folks they're trying to collect the money for think they're not doing enough.
Hmm.
Some people think your government in the United States is acting savagely, and other people think they're not doing enough. So who's going to set that ethnic or ethic code of ethics? There isn't one. There isn't one. Oh, it was ethically okay to come and destroy the Indian culture in order so you can have a place to be. So in order for you to be right, everyone else in the universe must die, you say. And you're going to do what I want you to do, or I'm going to bomb you, or get a war, or talk about you, or ruin you, or take you to court, or on and on and on and on and on. See, the ethics of that, the dichotomy of that is you get to a point where you don't care. And once you get to a point where you don't care, then it doesn't matter what they do. The ethics of that become, if you're nice to somebody, you want them to be nice to you. If you're mean to somebody, you want to be nicer. If they're mean, you want them to be nicer. And that wanting becomes an expression, that emotion that's caused from that causes a contrast which redefines what it is that you're trying to create. And then the next thing you know, you can even go to New York City where everyone supposedly is mean and they'll be the most pleasant, nice people in the whole wide world. You see? Just in the ethics can be derived on your plane and the whole wide world will line up to what it is that meets your expectation because it's your creation. So now you don't have to worry about it. How is it that the murderers and the murderees get hooked up together anyway? How does the rapers and the rapees get hooked up together anyway? How is it that a gangbangers can have a drug war, all right, and they driving through their subdivision or project or whatever they call that these days, and they shooting at each other, got great big guns, and they just tearing up everything, putting out 100 rounds a minute. Now, and nobody's covered, everybody's shooting straight at each other, and a four-year-old girl in an upstairs apartment two rows over will catch a bullet in the head. How do you line that up, you say? And yet, well, one, they're 5 feet away from, are we there?
Yes.
Oh, there was a beep, and I didn't know if you had lost out. If we were.
No, I'm here.
Right. And how do you get to the point of the people that was being shooting at each other, none of them get shot. They don't even end up in your ER. But the four-year-old little girl catches up a bullet in the head and dies, goes out immediately. You line up from the vibrational proximity of the throwing of the bullet and the catching of the bullet. Same way with the rapers. Same way with the pedophiles. Same way with everything. You have to be in the vibrational proximity of it. Otherwise, everybody would have died of the Black Plague, remember?
Mm-hmm.
But some of them didn't line up with that, so they weren't affected by it. See?
That's perfect. That, again, brings me almost like a perfect dovetail to my next question.
The tongue and groove is works pretty good after a little while.
I'm enjoying how it's flowing. So the vibrational stream.
All right.
I'm interested in how the seven chakra centers, crown, brow, throat, heart, solar plexus, sacral, and root are going to be affected by
they're going to be
the thinning of the veil.
They're going to be opened. They're no longer going to be clogged. They're going to be used as a tool to allow yourself to adjust any causal. You understand why you have those, so that your physicalness can interact with non-physical, and your sensory heightened sensory perception can then come into a point where you don't have to have so much clearing. Then your third eye, your center chakra, then it becomes another way to see. But people get snot in their eye. They don't clear, they get clogged, so therefore that becomes limited or less. This is the same example. Let's say you don't believe that, okay, because it's a belief of a thought you've been thinking a long time. Okay, let's take that to the physical sensory. on all cylinders, maybe it's a better way to say it, operating on all cylinders is much, much, much more efficient than having two burnt valves.
And how can humans best develop direct wanting for themselves, for each individual?
If you have a burnt valve, then you get a tune-up. And you tune in, okay? You tune in. How do you receive a frequency that's in a radio box? How do you calibrate that frequency? You calibrate. You tune it in to that frequency, okay? And then you can be happy or mad that what you tune into is what you want or don't want. But it's okay because you can tune into something else. But once you line that up in that right proximity, you don't have to change the tuner. You can just experience your wanting on that very frequency of where you are. Isn't that amazing? Do you want to hear a song? Whatever the song is, I don't know what song you want. Pick your song. And you turn on the radio. You got to turn it on. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, there's just as much frequency whether your receiver's on or not. But if you choose to turn it on, and you can tune it ever how you want it, let's say it's already set on your, quote, favorite station, but they don't just play your favorite song. They have lots of songs. They even have some talk radio. Ooh. You come to a place where you're tuned, and then what happens is you can have the experience of having your song just show up on the radio that you then can enjoy, and you don't have to do a thing. If you've got your box on and you're tuned to a frequency, doesn't make much difference what it is, and you have the volume to where it's to suit you and please you. Same way with a car. Some people like to go 100 miles an hour. Some people like to go 40 miles an hour. Either way, if it's out of whack of what is they're wanting, it could be a white knuckle slice, or it could be quite a boring ride. Isn't it interesting that the Concorde was the best thing we ever made? And that was wonderful. And the next thing you know, it, the experience became that that was just too fast. And then the next thing you know, they started crashing. Never had they crashed and had many problems. And all of a sudden, everything became a problem. Now that whole technology is no longer available. Uh-oh, where would McLuhan say that went? It got deferred to another time.
Hi. Again, I just want to focus a little bit on the last chakric center, the root or base or sex drive.
The ground.
Is there a deeper meaning to the sex drive in humans, a deeper impulse other than pleasure and procreation?
Well, wait now. What's better than pleasure and procreation? If that's the fastest path to your joy, then absolutely. But there's another part of that element that you're asking about, but you want us to develop a little. That's the grounding, the grounding part. Because if you're not grounded, you see, then sometimes the aberrated version of a sexual relationship becomes your driving force to your joy. See?
Exactly.
So
exactly. I'm asking about this aberrated version.
Oh, okay. Then if you're not grounded, then it becomes the sexual relations, the drawing of a copulative experience can be experienced all by yourself with a opposite sex, with same sex, with dogs and cats, and, you know, y'all can take this just as far as you want to because you create it, you see. You have any time, every conversation is two conversations. One side or one end of that stick comes into the place of the perfect creation process, which means you fall in love with someone, someone falls in love with you, and your space is that's around you. Sometimes you notice people will bump into your space or they'll get too close that makes you uncomfortable, and you'll back away or move away. Some people you want to get so close to them that you want to lick the inside of their ear. Well, that's pretty nasty, is it not? Yes. Some people you just can't get close enough to, okay? That's the two non-physical parts resonating with each other. Then what happens is you come together, okay? And that's pretty good. It's a lot of hormones, but hey, it works. It's a very blissful, joyous creation. contrast, which made it where you could choose or not choose. The same way you don't have a PDA, and you could have. See?
Mm.
But the PDA isn't bad, okay? And then if the pornography pushes against what you're resonating, then you can choose not to participate in it, or star in it, or even watch it, see? And then all of a sudden it has no effect on your beingness, because you're aware of it, you're aware of PDAs, but they're not the devil incarnate, you see? Neither is anything else. It's fun that way, isn't it?
Yes. Fine. Okay, I'd like to move on to another topic.
This is...
I'm wondering... Yes. When will we see a real-world working application of Code Fusion, and which country will have it first?
All right, there's a few aspects of that that we would like to go into, but it's going to require a little redefining on your part. When you talk about the practical application of Code Fusion, specifically, what do you mean?
I mean a real-world working Code Fusion process that will directly benefit a community of humans.
Oh, it's already been created.
And which country has created it first?
That's a little tricky. All of them will receive it, the benefit of it, at exactly or precisely the same time. But they may not all choose to activate it. But all of them will receive it at the same time.
Okay.
Do you see why I had to redefine that a little bit? Because
yes, I do. I understand.
There might have been an aspect that you were asking that we could give you some insight on, and we'll continue to further it if it's your wanting. But it has already, the technology's already been around for a very, 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 very long time. Okay? The working models, there's several working models now, but there are some issues and some problems with it, okay? And they've even figured out, because of their wanting, or maybe the 100 monkey syndrome, that there's something that you have to adjust to use to make it more efficient, see? Because what's so odd and unusual about that whole process is every other source that is created, every other source that's created, it takes energy or effort or action on your part. So you pump something in, twirl it around, and something comes out that then you use in the form of energy. Electricity, coal, petroleum, solar, wind, all those aspects. You've got to put something in and something comes out different that you can control to convey for your consumptive purposes. Do you agree?
I agree.
All right. This technology is very, very different. This technology now comes into a place where all you do is put the components and the elements together, start it, okay? Start it. And once you start it, then it continually gives energy.
But
without the splitting of the atom, which then causes your old uraniums, your PT-57 waste nodules that you have to plant back in your earth, which are radioactive. That's a big problem. Oh, wait, the uranium that they got out of the ground was radioactive and it didn't cause a problem. But storing the used or burnt cells, the cylinders, storing those after, I guess, the enrichment process makes them very dangerous. Very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's the landfill from hell.
And
it came out of the ground radioactive, you see. But this technology is different because it's only byproduct or waste through, so it'll work right.
The countries that do choose to implement it, will there be a favorable, positive response to their implementing it, or will there be a negative response to their implementing it from the rest of the countries that are not or have chosen not to use it?
Well, just like sex is a good idea, as sure as it's a good idea, you will have an aberrated, but you call abominable version of the very same thing. You have the choice. You individually have the choice. And then it doesn't even have to be about countries. It can be about you individually. You don't even have a PDA and you haven't stopped living.
Right.
So just because they decide, let's say they decided they wanted to stay on the grid, even within a country, that's perfectly all right. There's nothing wrong with that. But you're going, no, this will change everything. It now changes everything. Well, okay, great, wonderful. But if it's not in their perceived perception that it's better, then that's why things give you cancer or activate your cancer cells, because your powerlessness activates that